the Best Self Podcast. We have got rock star Alex Demchik with us today, the pride of Mizzou and author of Thrive You. He's also a podcast host and a keynote speaker and frankly, one of the good guys on the circuit.
Well, Brad, thanks for having me on your show. I've heard great things and excited to dig in here a little bit and learn from you and talk about some good things today. So thanks for having me.
Well, you bet, man. We kind of like a recruiting to a roster. We only recruit, or we only want to have people on here that kind of fit the culture that we're looking for, much like probably your podcast. We really only want people that are going to be students of the games themselves, always trying to outimprove their previous best self. And you really are that. I've listened to your podcast and I've listened to some of your speeches and just talking to you off air, you are a super nice guy. I don't know if you've ever heard of this book. It's called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Have you ever read that?
No, but I probably should have, because now there's probably things I didn't learn in kindergarten, I guess. So
yeah, it's by Robert Fulghum. And it's that title, All I Really Ever Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And I was thinking about some of your topics and the stuff that you dig. And a lot of it revolves around being your best self and doing your best and all that jazz. Do you buy into that? I mean, do you buy into the concept that stuff that we were told when we were 6 years old, just do your best, that'll be good enough? Do you buy into that?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question and concept. I mean, one thing that I think about right off the get-go from what you just kind of hit on and said there is, you know, right now, as we're still in the whole COVID situation here, we're almost, I guess, getting close to a year in, right? And so I think there's so many people right now that are in different situations. They're struggling. They are trying to figure things out. And I think, you know, one thought on that is when you look at your own life and you think about, am I being the best version of myself? Am I bringing my best? I think one thing that comes to mind for me is that we are all given certain gifts in life. We're all given different opportunities. We all have unique giftings that we've been given. And so I think when you talk about giving your best, I love that, because I spoke at a school recently and their slogan is bring your best, you know, bring your best every day, bring your best self. And right. I think we kind of do have, in some ways, maybe we'll dig into this a little bit more too, but almost like a stewardship responsibility. We have a responsibility with the gifts we've been given, to make an impact on other people. And I think there's some truth to what you were saying, you know, because there's so many things right now that we can't control. Yeah. But at the same time, even if you're working from home or you're a stay-at-home mom or you're a business owner, there's a lot of things that we can work on and can control in being the best version of ourselves every day. And I think that's something I have to remind myself as well.
Right. Yeah. It is interesting. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was surrounded by a great tribe growing up, and they all really did say, just do your best and just do your best. And you always hear that growing up, and it really is true. And I love what you say there, because I believe that we do all have LeBron talent. We all do have Tom Brady talent, and maybe in our own lane. It might not be athletically speaking or picking apart coverages or anything like that, but we all have some gift, as you alluded to, and it's just tapping into that. Do you, and like, so I was a coach, you were a coach. And I remember when I was younger, I would go to conferences and I would just be looking for new scheme or new ways to teach, you know, strategy or technique or whatever. But I found, maybe you can chime in on this too, that the best coaches I've ever been around, they dominated in relationships. They dominated in that. Would you agree? I mean, at some point, everyone has the same general concepts. What do you think is the X factor?
Oh, absolutely. You hit it right on the head. And you look at someone like Dabo Swinney at Clemson. You look at Mark Richt, an old football coach back in the day. You look at Tommy Lasorda, who just passed. You look at all these different amazing coaches who you were just kind of speaking to, and they didn't just master the X's and O's, right? They were masters of culture. And you know, and they knew that, hey, yes, I need to be on the top of my game, but I need to also bring in people around me that are going to be successful. And I need to be great when it comes to culture, because I think a lot of people don't invest in that. Like, so for example, I have the chance, you know, like you do as well with speaking, I have the chance, you know, normally when it's not COVID, to go around and speak at high schools, companies, things like that. And some of these companies, you'll notice that, you know, they'll just say, hey, we want to bring in a speaker, and the manager or the management will just say, hey, let's bring them in. And there's not really much interaction with you and that person. They just say, hey, yeah, you have 30 minutes, go and give a great inspiring talk. And you know, that's it. Which is great, you know, because there's, you know, as a speaker, as your career, you do that. And but I think one thing I've noticed is, you know, you can bring in a speaker all day to bring an inspiring message, but if the leadership and the coaches and the culture, if there's not like this mentality of, hey, we're actually going to live this every day, whether you're in a school or you're in a business, the people see right through that. And so I think
Absolutely.
that's the challenge, is like, you know, how do we build that culture, but then like live it every day in our own lives as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think there's a lot of coaches like that, or, you know, we're talking coaches because you and I both have athletic backgrounds, but I mean, people don't leave jobs, they leave management. And, you know, you see that stuff all the time. And you see a lot of people that are really good motivators, but as you said, alluded to, people tend to see right through that. And so you'll see these coaches and these bosses and these management and these CEOs, they come in right away and make a splash. But 2, 3, 4, or 5 years down the road, the place is just nosediving because their values weren't sustainable. They didn't base their stuff around their values.
Oh,
So.
exactly. And you even look at, you know, I think it was, I don't watch baseball all the time, but the Houston Astros deal, or right, just a few years last year with all the stuff that came out with that, or you look at Enron or these other companies, and really one of the core things I think that it breaks down to is integrity. You just hit on it without even saying it. You know, these principles and values, like when times get hard, you know, are you still living those foundational values? And I think, you know, a big part of that is integrity, and part of knowing your gifts and saying, knowing the gifts and talents you have, and then the gap between you actually doing those, that's kind of a performance gap. I think it takes integrity to not only realize that, but then act on those things and those out every day.
Oh, that's good. And I really think, I mean, I feel sorry. I sort of feel sorry for the leaders who don't understand this concept, because you're really missing the boat. The job cannot possibly be as fun. It's one of those deals where you're unaware that you're unaware. The job could be so much more fun and rewarding if you're into heart-centered business or core value-centered business. I mean, I think about my favorite moments in my playing days, my coaching days, my teaching days, my speaking. It's all been stuff that's made me feel, you know, positive stuff. I was curious, you're super sharp cat, no pun intended, with the Mizzou Tigers over there. Is there one thing that just you continue to hit on that you feel in all your speaking engagements and when you consult with people that's a competitive edge? Like, you have this and you have a competitive edge. Is there one thing you could pinpoint?
If there's one thing that I could pinpoint, but outside of culture, which we kind of already talked on, I would say, and I think this actually is a part of culture, and I said it earlier, but I want to emphasize it a little bit deeper as well. It's integrity. And the reason why I want to say integrity is because I truly believe that integrity is a business advantage, and it's a culture advantage. Like you just said, I feel bad for the leaders who don't live that way, right? And so it's true. When you look at them, you say, man, that is sad, because they're not going to get their employees or their team members to be at their potential. And if you think about integrity, so like when I live, like let's say I live my life with integrity, you know, in doing that, you know, that what the next thing that's going to happen is that people are going to look at my life and say, oh, wow, he's congruent. So like some of the areas of his life are congruent, right? And so integrity then leads to congruence in my life. And then, you know, once that congruence, once people know you in the community or know you on your team is like, hey, you know, Brad is someone who follows through with what he says he's going to do. He's a hard worker. He gets the work done. Then naturally that congruence, it leads to profit, because guess what? People want to do business with someone who they love or they care about, you know, that know, they know they're going to get the job done. So really integrity leads to profit. And I think a lot of business owners, and I think a lot of sports teams, they just don't apply that. And I think that's truly a business advantage is, you know, I think that's something, especially with COVID, we're working remotely. It's hard to know like who's getting their work done, things like that. But I think, man, if you can master that as a leader, and I mean, I'm preaching to myself here as well, you know, in my marriage and the things that I have spheres of influence over, I'm preaching to myself. But I think, you know, integrity is something that I think is not talked about very often. There's not really a metric, right? Like, so in baseball, you're like, okay, this guy's hit 7 home runs. Well, for integrity, you don't really have a metric, you know, other than if something negative happens, it's in the news, right? But other than that, I mean, I think as leaders, sometimes we need to look at, okay, how am I doing in this area? Am I congruent in my family, in my relationships, and in my business and life?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is so good. 100%, man. I know you're a big goal guy. You like to talk about goals, as you should. You think it's more important to change the habit or set the goal? If you're starting out, do you set the long-term goal first, or do you set the system change, the habit change first?
Yeah, I like the word system that you just used, because have you read James Clear's book, Atomic Habits?
I'm in the middle of it right now. Okay. Love it.
Great book. And I think one of the big things he talks about in that book is that essentially you're a product of the systems that you place in your life, that you have in your life. You know, there's going to be days where you don't feel like getting up and working out or doing whatever. But if you have a system in place that allows you to do that, you're probably going to be a lot more successful. And I think I would lean towards the systems a little bit over, you know, I think just even during COVID, it's so easy for people to get off of their routine. I've seen in my own life and I've seen other people's lives. I think you really have to think, I mean, first, I think you have to look at the long-term goal and vision. Like, where do I want to head? What is the goal of this? Mm-hmm. You know, I think without doing that, what are you aiming for?
Right.
So, you know, I think that has to be done first. But then after that, after you've identified, okay, where am I headed? Define the win. What is the win? What are the distractions that are in the way of that? Right. Yeah. And so what are the distractions? Do I need to move anything out of my life that is not allowing me to do that? But then I need to create winning systems in my life. And so, you know, I think you can apply that to really any areas of life, marriage, relationships, business.
Right.
And I think you just kind of work the system in that way. And I think then if you have then rapid feedback, knowing, okay, how did I just do on how I just performed? You know, how did I do compared to last time? And then building from there, I think that's just an easy way to start seeing small progress that builds up over time.
Absolutely. That's so good. Yeah. I would compare, I agree with all that. If you don't have a long-term goal, you got to have short-term goals too, right? I mean, but if you don't have a long-term goal, that's kind of like jumping in a race car with no steering wheel. Yeah. You can go really fast, but you have no idea where you're going. So.
Oh, exactly. And I think that's so true. And something that John Gordon talks about, who you've had on the show is, you know, the reason we get burnt out, it's not because of what we're doing, right? Like burnout doesn't, you know, if you're grading papers or if you're, working out, usually it's not the actual physical burnout. Sometimes it is, but normally it's not. It's usually because you forget why you're doing that thing. And so you're working, you're doing this, you're doing that. And then it's like, you just stop working on that thing because you've forgotten your why. And I think when we can keep the why front and center, it just helps us align our long-term goals with our short-term goals.
Yeah. Boom. That is great, man. So you were a walk-on at Mizzou. You were a quarterback, which means you theoretically should be pretty cerebral and all that jazz. And being a walk-on's not the easy route. I mean, you're doing all the work, but you're not seeing the gridiron a whole lot in games, and you've probably had to bust your butt to get on that roster. You were overlooked a little bit in high school, and there are no guarantees. There's a lot of stuff that goes with that, but I think you learn a ton from it. The Auburn's head football coach just got hired in football. Wasn't ever a guy. He was a backup to Kellen Moore.
He was at Boise State, right?
Yeah, he was a Boise State's head football coach, just got hired at Auburn. But I don't think he was a scholarship guy when he first came to Boise State. I think he eventually got put on it, but he's an extremely smart guy. But I mean, anyway, I look at that. What are some things you learned from being a walk-on?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I heard a coach say one time, he was an old coach at Oregon. He said, you know, walk-ons turn out to be the best employees you'll ever have. So I'm not saying that that's me. I'm just saying in general, I think why he said that is because walk-ons are just kind of used to doing the grunt work, like you said, and going through the not the flashy, not the sexy stuff, okay. But you're still in it and you're doing a lot of the hard work. But I would say for me, I just had to learn ownership. The guy right next to you is on a full scholarship and they have their school paid for and you don't.
Right.
And so I think that translates into the real world. You might be in a job where you make less money than the person who's next to you, but that can't affect, that shouldn't affect the way that you perform or you prepare. And I think for me, just the ownership mentality of, okay, when I get a critique from a coach and he tells me, hey, you need to work on this, am I defensive? Am I making excuses? Or am I trying to take that advice and work on areas that I can control? And I think that's a huge thing for me that I've been able to translate into my life is, I think, just the discipline. Our coach wouldn't accept people being late. If you showed up late to a meeting, I mean, good luck.
Yeah.
Right. And if your cell phone goes off in a meeting, that's a scary situation to be in. So, I mean, even just like before we started this podcast, I checked to make sure my cell phone was, because I think I would have done it out of courtesy anyway.
Right.
But I think honestly, just thinking about back to those meetings, like, man, being on time and then making just little things like that, that you learn. And I think, doing things that maybe help the team or help move the organization forward, but maybe don't help you move forward. Yeah. It can be very humbling at the time. But I think those are the lessons that I took from it and now hopefully can apply in other areas of my life. Cause it's humbling at the time, but you look back and you're like, wow, I'm a lot better for that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an ancient term called antimbulo. I'm thinking of you when I'm listening. It's essentially carving the path, carving the way, clearing the path for others. And that the Cliff Note version of that story is there's a guy who thinks this sucks. I'm doing all the grunt work. I'm not getting any of the spotlight. Nobody knows I'm here, blah, blah, blah. But by way of him doing that, he was also part of the experience and got to be a part of so many different cool things that in the end totally benefited him. It's all just a matter of choice and taking ownership of your thoughts and being grateful, like having an attitude of gratitude, blessed, not stressed, all that jazz.
I love that. Have you ever heard the Push the Rock story?
I don't think so.
I actually have it here in my office if you want me to read it off. It kind of goes off what you just said. I think it could maybe encourage a few of your listeners.
Go for it.
Okay, here I go. This was spontaneous, but I think what you just said made me get this paper out because I think it totally applies to what you're saying. So here's the story. I've never read a story on a podcast, but hey, for first time for everything. All right. The story is called Push the Rock. There was once a man who went to his boss and said, I know I can work harder. Can you give me more work to do? And his boss said, why, yes, I have something very important for you to do. The boss showed him a large rock, explaining that he was to push against the rock with all of his might. The man did, and for many days he toiled from sunup to sundown, his shoulders set squarely against the cold, massive surface of the rock, pushing with all of his might. Each night the man returned home sore and worn out, feeling that the whole entire day was spent in vain. Seeing that the man showed signs of discouragement, one of his coworkers entered the picture. The coworker said to the man, why kill yourself over this? You're never going to move it. You haven't even scratched the surface. These comments discouraged and disheartened the man, and he started to ease up his efforts. Yeah, why kill myself over this? He thought. I will just put in my time, putting forth just the minimum effort, and surely that will be good enough. The next day, his boss showed up at the job site. The man said to his boss, "Sir, I have labored long and hard, putting forth all my strength to do what you've asked of me. And after all this time, I have not even budged the rock half a millimeter. What is wrong? Why am I failing?" To this, his boss responded compassionately, "My friend, when you asked me for work, I told you the job and you accepted. I told you to push the rock, to push against the rock with all of your strength, and that you have done. But never once did I mention to you that I expected you to move it, at least not by yourself. Your task was to push, and now you come to me, your strength spent, thinking you have failed, ready to quit. But is this really so? Look at yourself. Your arms are strong and muscled, your hands are calloused from constant pressure, and your legs have become massive and hard. Through opposition, you have grown much, and your ability now far surpasses that which you used to have. Yet still, you haven't succeeded in moving the rock, and you come to me now with a heavy heart and your strength spent. I, my friend, will move the rock. Your calling was to be obedient and to push, and this you have done." So,
yeah.
I think that just speaks to what you were just saying. Like,
right.
You know, we all of us think, I want to be in the spotlight. I want to be the CEO. I want to run the show. But man, when we're in situations in life where we didn't expect it to go that way, mm-hmm. what is our response? And I think that's just an encouraging story that I actually, you know, read that in college, and I still have that to this day because it really encourages me.
Love it, man. There's a first for everything. Huge.
Podcast storytelling. So
that's right.
First time.
Yeah. I often think about those kind of things because I'm sure you're the same way. When I talk to people about culture and sustainable stuff, we talk about feelings. And I know you like to talk about legacy, and legacy is something you leave in others. It's not something physical, it's something you leave in others. And you know, 20 years from now, what you're going to remember about your teammates at Mizzou, or what, you know, one of our listeners who works at, you know, wherever in whatever country, we've got 47 countries tuning in.
Wow.
They're going to remember the way their coworkers made them feel. Like, they're going to remember the way they were treated. That's the stuff. No one's going to remember the bottom line or your quarter three earnings or how your pass completion percentage. No one's going to remember that stuff. But I think about stuff like the locker room, like the pregame stuff, like the meetings, the little interaction type stuff, and all that kind of stuff ropes into your culture. Do you believe culture's king?
Huge, very much so. And I think a good quote to go along with what you just said is, no one cares about how much you know until they know how much you care, right? Yeah. That's a classic John Maxwell quote. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so true. And it ties back even to the integrity piece we talked about earlier. My friends, my former teammates that reach out to me now, like you said, they're not reaching out about football stuff.
Yeah.
They don't care. I mean, we don't care about that, right? They're reaching out about life stuff, or, hey, I just had my first kid, like things like that. And so I think those people that are reaching out, maybe, you know, if you didn't live in that way, maybe wouldn't. And so I think it's not, like you said, it's not about my numbers. It's about, man, how did Brad make me feel? Yeah. And can I trust that person? Because I think that integrity leads to the trust that allows you to even have those bonds and relationships. So yeah, you're spot on with that for sure.
Oh man. I love this chat. You know, kind of shifting gears, talking about increasing performance. What would you say the biggest roadblock to opening new doors for growth would be for people that just are unaware that they're unaware? What would you say that would be if you could pinpoint it?
I would pinpoint it to themselves. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote a blog post 2 mornings ago just about this post. And I think since COVID began, I think there is an uptick of 41%. In mental health cases, as far as like people, 41% more people are going to the doctor for mental health situations is kind of what I was trying to say there. Right. And so obviously right now we're, you know, still in a pandemic, things like that. But I think so often we listen to lies about ourselves that impact our performance moving forward 100%. And I think if you think about this for a second, think about whatever career you're in, whatever country you're listening. And if you're in Ukraine, I have a lot of Ukrainians in my family, so shout out to you guys. But 47 nice. Countries, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Think about your life and think about if you could take out fear out of the equation. You know, that would change, that would radically change your performance. That would radically change the way you prepare, train. You know, let's say you're in sales, reach out to people, because without the fear component, you're just going to, everything's so different, and you're going to perform at a level where you say, you know what, all I can do is give my best. And outside of that, I can't do anything else.
Right.
And that's all I got. That's all I got is to give my best. And then that's all. Right. And so I think if people can understand that it's probably not other people holding them back, it's not other people saying, yeah, you can't do it. It's themselves. And I think that's something that I think we need to remember as we are going through all this stuff that we're going through, is what are the barriers and roadblocks you're putting in your own life that are not allowing you to move forward? And, you know, what are specific, and get specific, what are lies you're telling yourself? Yeah. You know, we have an exercise that we do when I speak with organizations that I have them write down, like, what is a specific lie that you believe about yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. Now replace that lie with truth, you know, and John Gordon speaks a lot about that as well, you know, speaking truth to the lies rather. And I think when you do that, then that fear, the imposter syndrome, those things fade to the background, because you're like, you know what? I don't have to live in fear. I don't have to listen to the lies. I can speak truth to the lies, but that does take discipline. It takes discipline to say, you know what? I'm not going to allow my mind to think that way. I'm going to speak truth into that situation.
Oh man. Awesome. Yeah, I agree. I loved everything about that. Fear is a liar. Fear's a liar. And one, I would say that for our listeners out there, don't run away from fear, lean into it. If you were driving a car and your car started to, I don't know, maybe you've heard this analogy before. This is one of my go-tos. You know, if I was driving a car and my back of my car started to fishtail, would you steer away from it or would you steer into it? You would steer into it. You would steer into the fishtail. You wouldn't steer away from it. You wouldn't go away from the struggle. You would lean into it. And I think fear is the same way. I read a stat recently where 85% of our worries never come true. Like 85% of our worries don't even come true. And just, man, when you're talking right there, it immediately made me think of that. Like, all this stuff that we're afraid of. I mean, obviously some fears are justified, but the bulk of them are people just afraid of failure. They have some sort of scarred experience from who knows when, and it's totally holding them back. They could be so much more if they would just embrace it, like inhale it and spit out excellence.
Right. And that's so true. Cause what are we taught to do? If there's something like that happens, people say, oh, we don't talk about that. Conceal it. Right. Or hide it, or whether it's an addiction or whatever it is, don't deal with that. Don't bring it to the light. But when we bring it to the light, then we're healed and we can move forward and we can, you know, start conquering that fear. So I think that's so, so important.
Gold. All right, buddy. Hey, we've got like 4 minutes, then I am throwing Dem Check Nation to the curb.
I love that.
So if you had to choose between resilience, mental agility, and let's go empathy, if you had to choose one of those three to be a prime factor in creating great leadership, I know those are all three rock star terms. Which one would you run with first?
I think I would run with resilience. And I think about someone named Billy Graham, who a lot of people know. He passed away a few years ago, but I read one of his books and he just talked about, you know, his legacy. You know, he wanted integrity to be the hallmark of his legacy.
Right.
And one of a quote that he said that I want to share, I thought this was really good. He said, "You can live for a month without food, days without water, minutes without oxygen, but you can't live a second without hope." And I think that was a really insightful quote. And in the way he lived his life at an old age, he finished well. And so I think when you talk about resilience, like you mentioned, that's something that you have to start well, you progress well, but then you also finish well. And you look at his life, Yeah, I just think that just seeing the impact he had, he was a counselor to many presidents. He author of 40 plus books. He just did some amazing things. He had a 63-year marriage, and you know, he was in it for the long haul. And I think resilience is what allows that to happen. Back to the integrity again, the integrity of having resilience to know I have a lot. This is who I see myself at the end of my life. This is what I want people to say about me. And I think once you've defined that, it kind of, it impacts the way you make decisions moving forward.
Right. It's clear, buddy. Your ethical compass is awesome. I love how integrity is such a big deal to you. Just a couple more questions. Do you believe that it's more important to be skillful or willful?
Yeah. I mean, I that's probably a trick question. Cause I think you need
No, you've been so good so far. I'm trying to throw you off.
No. I mean, I would for sure say you need both. Like you can't, I was in a meeting recently. I gave a talk on integrity just while we're on the topic, and a CEO of this organization, there's about eight people in the room. And he asked me that question, but he said, what's more important, integrity, living it or talking about it as a culture? He's like, I have 100 employees. Do I talk about it or live it? And I said the same thing I said to him, and I said to you, is both. They're both important, because without like the skills of refining your craft, and like, if you would have never been a good communicator and you started a podcast, you wouldn't have people from 47 countries listening. Right. You probably wouldn't, you know, unless they just wanted to give you some moral support or something.
Right.
But most likely they wouldn't. They have other podcast listens too. So you have to, be skillful in your craft. And you know, you'll get opportunities that maybe you didn't even think were possible. But I think also, if you just have the skill but don't have any will, how are you going to get in the door at some of these places? And so I think it's both. I think it's a good balance. I hope I can look back on my career and say I did both of those things that you just brought up.
Right. All right. Riding the fence on that one, Demchek. Riding the fence. Well, buddy, we are going to wrap her up. Could you tell us a little bit about your podcast and what they can expect when they tune into that, and then how we can get a hold of you?
Yeah. So my website is alexspeaking.com, and people can reach out there on social media. Just Alex Demchek is my name. And, you know, my podcast is called the Athlete Podcast, where we interview different pro college athletes. And I'll be coming out with another podcast this year as well. That's kind of centered towards not just athletes. And then as far as a book, me and John Gordon are coming out with a book in 2021. So excited about that. So
awesome.
Got some cool things going, but thanks. And I'm just excited. And thanks for sharing this podcast with, you know, with me. And I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah, you bet, buddy. Well, you got 30 to 45 seconds to talk to our listeners, 5 continent wide. How can they out improve their previous best self?
Out improve your previous best self. First, you have to measure what your previous best self was, right? And so just to come out in 2021 and say, I want to have a better year financially, or I want to go to the, you know, gym more often, well, have you even tracked how often you did that previously? I think that's number one, right? Is where am I currently? You know, I heard Gary V, he said the other day, every single day I get on the scale every single day because I want to know where I'm at. And for me, I just know, like, if I get on the scale, I'm a little heavier, I'm going to go a little lighter on food. And so that's just a food example, right? But, you know, measuring where you're at, so you have the metrics of how can I improve. I think the most successful leaders, entrepreneurs, athletes do that constantly, not in like a fearful way, but in a realistic, raw way. How can I get better? Because I need to know what I'm building off of. I need to know where I'm starting at and where I'm headed.
Right. Awesome, buddy. So good. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know you've got an awesome 4-month-year-old little kiddo and an amazing family, and you're so good at what you do. I hope everyone goes out and checks you out, and you make it a great day, big guy.
Brad, thanks for having me. Big fan of your podcast, and love it, and thanks for having me on.
You bet, man. Make it a great day.